going to jump right in and share just a little bit about where I left off. Last time when I did come, I was talking about practices that we could use in compassion and mindfulness that could benefit us and that would help with our own self-care. And so I want to keep track of the time. And so I'm going to share my slide set, but I love seeing you. So I'm going to be back and forth if you don't mind. Let's see. Let me put this in a good position. Okay. So one of the things that we talked about last time before we got to the self-care is we named some of the things that are going on in the world. And I realized when I first started doing this presentation or something like it, I think I had 5 things on the paper. And then this before the pandemic. And now you see I have more than 5 things on the slide. And I keep adding things because the stressors that are going on globally seem to be on fire, right? They're increasing. And so the thing that I get in relationship to that is the amount of trauma that we're all going through. Now, of course, some to a lesser degree than others, but the truth is, if you're alive at this time, you're going through some kind of stress. Hopefully not our babies and our young children who kind of don't know quite what's going on, but even they are probably picking up on the stress. We know that epigenetics talks about that I have received some of the stress from my parents and their parents, etc. So whatever we can do to mitigate this ongoing stress that we're all encountering, the better. So the first part of the presentation that I gave before was I expressed it in terms of these powers that we could use to try to mitigate some of the stressors that we're currently under. And so it was about self-care, how you can better care for yourself. And I just summarized them here. There were different ones, the power of closing your eyes, the power of your breath, which you know, taking a good deep breath can, I showed you the brain and the amygdala. Those breaths can calm that amygdala down and reduce the number of stress hormones that are activated in our systems. So closing the eyes, taking some good deep breaths, and there's a variety of breathing techniques you can use, stepping away, taking a moment, the power of awe and imagination and visualization. We just used that in the meditation we just did. The power of loving kindness and the power there is in being your own best friend. You know how to be a best friend, but have you ever been your own best friend? The power of compassionate language, like how are you talking to yourself? What is the language that you use? And it's not to take away, like if there's a goal that you want to accomplish. It doesn't mean get soft on yourself and allow yourself to slack. It's more, how would you coach yourself or encourage yourself Or how would you coach a friend or encourage a friend? It would be encouraging language. And so that's what we mean by the power of compassionate language, the power of living deeply. Sometimes we're unhappy and we don't know why. And if we can dig in a little bit, we might find that we're not really living the life that we wanted to according to what we say we value. Am I consciously and intentionally living my values, frankly? And sometimes I can get a little off course, maybe trying to satisfy other people. Maybe I think this is what I should do. I get a little off. And if I can find my way back to my values, including my personal values, that can help get me centered. And it can also help reduce some of the stress, because now I'm more in alignment with who I say I want to be, who I hope that I am. The power of filling up your vessel. I think I use this all the time. So I'm thinking I might have showed this. The point is, here right now, I've got a little ice lemon water going here. But here, I want to fill my jug with rest, play, going for walks, petting my dog, eating good food, right? I have to pick the things that I value and do them so I can fill up my water jug, and then I can pour into all of the activities and people and things and work. And the challenge, what happens very often, is we've been pouring and pouring and pouring, but not refilling the vessel. So the power of filling up your own vessel, the power of supportive and soothing touch. This I adopted from one of my teachers, Kristen Neff, who introduced this. To some degree, we already knew this and we already do this. She kind of formalized it and gave us some steps, but one good breath with it is really good. Putting your hand on one cheek. It's you touching yourself to soothe yourself. Two cheeks. And then you just pick what works for you. One hand here. Sometimes I'm in Zoom meetings all day, and when I'm on my third or fourth one, you might see me here with a few deep breaths to go with it, right? Kind of giving myself some comfort. You can pat, circle. I can use two hands. Can have one hand here, one on my belly. You would do whatever is comfortable for you. Could rub one arm. Like I could be, yeah, I had a tough day, right? Gonna soothe myself. And maybe an outright hug. Closing my eyes, that adds a little bit more to it. And taking a good deep breath, that adds even more to it. And then the last one was the power of authenticity and embodiment. So I'm going to go out of my slide set just so I can see you all. And that one really can be powerful, because I'm realizing being fake is detrimental to your health and well-being, right? It can cause you some anxiety, some stress. And so I encourage myself and all of us to practice living authentically. If we don't know, say we don't know. You know, if we're trying, it's good to try. Like kind of being honest. And when I was speaking to, I forgot your name, but at the beginning, that's another thing that I mentioned that can help you in challenging situations, right? If you're real and authentic, then if you're not fake and phony, then I'm more inclined to hear you out. Even if you make a mistake, I'm more inclined. Okay, I'm kind of perceiving, I'm picking up on the vibe of this person. And, you know, if I've experienced any trauma or stress, and not, I'm generalizing, I just want to make this statement. And I don't know if it's 100% true, but from my experience, people who have experienced some level of trauma are very hypersensitive, right? And very able to pick up on fake people. They can kind of just read you. Why? Because they kind of had to be able to read people. Now, maybe sometimes they are wrong, right? Maybe they're perceiving that you're fake or that you're coming with ill intentions. And maybe they're wrong. But all I'm trying to say is, especially when you're dealing with people that are different than yourself, it's good if you're honest and authentic. And from that place, then try to connect to others and build a relationship. I hope that makes sense. It'll make a little bit more sense when we get into the total theme of this evening. And so basically last time, and I know many of you are here for the first time, but last time you were kind of to pick and see how could you benefit, how could your self-care benefit by utilizing those different powers. So makes sense. So I want to go to, okay, so what are we, oops, sorry, forgot to share that. I want to go to where we're headed tonight. And let me catch up. So now we know kind of how to care for ourselves. And now, how do we care for others, especially in light of all of these dimensions of diversity that are clashing in the world today? So first, do no harm. Yeah, that's the first thing you want to remember. And I know sometimes you're not trying to do harm, meaning you have a certain intent, but the impact of what you do is different than what you intended. So we always want to have the intention to do no harm, while at the same time recognizing that sometimes we hurt other people. So I'm going to just go kind of fast on this part until I get to what would I call it? The highlight of this lesson. So first, I just want to name dimensions of diversity. And we alluded to it early in the little early part before the class officially started. But these are some of the ways that we're different. So you might encounter someone who's a different race, ethnicity, age, they might have different skin colors from a different culture, different nationality, different gender, different religion, et cetera. And I don't have every difference on here, but from moment to moment, potentially, we might encounter someone who is expressing those different dimensions. I'm going to go over this quick. I'm going to provide it for you, I think, before I provided slides for you, so you can kind of look more in detail about that. But basically, diversity really just means all of the differences. All of the differences, for example, that go in a workplace. And they're all the ones that I just said, all of those differences. When we're being, when we hear the word equality, we mean that you're being fair or equal to all of those dimensions of diversity. When you hear the word equity, that means that you're providing people with what they need, right? It's a slightly different. You're providing them with what they need. Inclusion means that, okay, so you have the diversity, but are you including? Are you inclusive? Are you giving everybody equal access to the benefits that you're offering? And belonging is similar. That just ensures that all of the people feel like they belong. And I'm just mentioning those terms because today, all of those terms are kind of used interchangeably. When I started in corporate America 25 years ago, it was the diversity department. Then it was diversity and inclusion. Now it's inclusion and belonging. So all of these terms are kind of interchangeable, if you will, and I'll include these other definitions when I get to the gist of what I want to talk about. Now, let me just check the chat just to make sure. Okay, great. Thank you for my assistants who are contributing to the conversation. All right. So I want to name this because it's important in understanding the true dynamic that we're living with. And this isn't linear, even though I've got that arrow pointing out. Any of these could hit at any moment. But the key thing is that when something is a bias, it really means it's kind of the lightest form of the definitions, the words that are on here. What do I mean by that? If you have a bias towards something, it could be a preference. I prefer this over that. I could have a bias and maybe not be hurting another person, but I could have a bias and actually hurt a person. So it's kind of a light form where some of these other things are getting heavier all the way up to death, for example. The thing that happens over time is that a bias unchecked can become a stereotype, or a stereotype can ratchet up and become a prejudice. Maybe I just had a bias at first. Now I'm kind of stereotyping. I'm saying all people like that or like this, right? And then it could ratchet up. Maybe now I'm being prejudiced, meaning when I see someone in that group, I'm projecting some behavior onto them. And then it can ratchet up. Maybe now I'm discriminating against all the people like that person. And that's where we start to get into racism and the isms of the day, meaning it can keep going. It can become bigotry. It can become institutional. It can become systemic. It can utilize oppression. And unfortunately, it can lead to death. So what am I trying to make a point of here? We want to identify it within ourselves when it's in the bias arena, right? We want to be able to check. I want to check myself when I'm noticing. I want to be mindful and notice when I'm starting to stereotype, or when I'm prejudging, or if I'm discriminating. I want to check myself. So let me just come back so I can see you. Is that making sense? Yeah, you get that part. Okay. All right. Let's keep going. Okay. So as you're listening, I want you to listen. Oh, I see a hand. I'll be right with you. As you're listening, I want you to think from three different places, meaning as we go forward, think, what does this mean to me personally as an individual? What does this mean as a professional, right? Maybe in a job or career or something. And you could also look at it, what does this mean in relationship to the institution that I'm a part of? And just to state this, to cure racism or the isms of the day, you have to treat the disease, not just the symptoms. So I want to go into my tree metaphor. I love my picture, but I want to see you, and I want to get this question, and then we'll come back to my metaphor. Yes, Gail. Oh, let me help you unmute. There we go.
Okay. Hi. Yes, thanks. Hi. I have a question about, I really like this breakdown because it gives language to how to, you know, thread the needle sometimes.
Yes. Yes. Is that what you were going to say?
Yeah. But I have a question. Yeah. And I don't know if this is the place to ask, but I thought I'd give it a whirl.
Give it a whirl.
I have really like friends and family 5 to 6 generations back of best friends who have adopted, I call it, this is a simplistic form of it, Trump's versions of who's a good guy and who's a bad guy. And they're actually getting perks for praying in public over you like you're the devil. Ooh. They get trips to Phoenix to go play with Sarah Palin by family members with money. And when you see them do, you know, and I also come from a family with a lot of Alaska Native trauma history. So I kind of know sometimes some of this will, you know, what you see is not always what you're going to get.
Right.
But it seems like these new versions of things, because there's so many things going on, they look lost. And my other nursing friends that are from these kinds of families from the other side tell me, oh, they're Moonies. You know, they have been, you know, brainwashed, and there's nothing we can do. But I wonder, I am at a loss.
Well, it's tough, right? This isn't easy work, meaning part of what I'm going to show is why we're having the problems we're having, because they're rooted in some of our history, some of how we've been socialized. Sometimes it's based on our family or the community that we grew up in. And so it's hard, and I'm kind of predicting where I'm about to head, but it's hard to change the fruit when the roots are still in these structures that are not open to differences and this world that we're trying to create, if that makes sense. Meaning, some of the things that you just said sounds like to me that some people grew up in that thinking construct and right. maybe attracted other people. So that's part of what has to be transformed. But how do you transform it? And that's part of what I want to present. So I'm gonna answer it, well, not just like that, right? I'm going to tell you my strategy for it. But at the same time, I'm saying it's not that easy to do. Going back to when I said when I was in corporate for 25 years, and I was doing organizational development, organizational change. And you know what? It's not easy to change. Right? It's not easy to change an organization that's been operating the way they've been operating for decades. It's like getting an ocean liner to turn. And so people do dig in. They dig their heels in. And yeah. they have to be motivated to change. But that I'm going to talk a little bit about it, but I appreciate you naming what you're doing yeah. now is naming the challenge that's ahead of
yeah.
us. And a couple
and
of
friend people, it. Yeah. yeah. Focus our hearts and energies on what is doable. Part of the reason
right. I mean, that's part of it, but you can't quite close your eyes to what's happening. You also have to be aware of what's happening. So I'm going to keep going.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you so much, Gail, for naming that. And I do thank you for mentioning virtue signaling. That's going back to, are you being a faking pony, right? Your virtue signaling, trying to indicate that you're all about it and being about it and understand and see, but you don't, or at some base level, I don't see that it's real, or I don't feel that it's real. So that's a thing too. Where are you, Jed? Are you somewhere where I can raise your hand if you wanna? If you raise your hand, you'll pop to the front. There you are. Want to unmute? You don't have to come on camera if you don't want. Anything you want to add?
Yeah, I'm just curious. It's what I've seen is it's just very easy to, you know, say, for example, you know, posting a pride flag during Pride Month or something on your
yeah
on your social media profile,
yeah,
but not, you know, going out and educating yourself on the politics that are playing out right now as we speak, and
I agree
can to, you know, to actually support that community.
I agree with you 100%. That's why you have to do what you don't want to be the virtue signaler. right? We can be responsible kind of for ourselves, but I like that you're naming that, because people can feel that they're doing something by having the flag there, you know, and I guess on some level, maybe, I don't know, but there's a difference in that and really taking some action and doing something. And so that's where I want to point you all toward as we move forward. But thanks for mentioning that. That was a good point. Excellent point. Okay, so let's go back to my tree metaphor just for a second. Here we go. Where are you, tree? There you are. Okay, so here's the point. When we look at the things that are happening, and I could add that virtue signaling up on the top, I keep adding things to it, meaning if what we see going on in society is hate and apathy and bias, and it's all about me and I'm shut down and I'm prejudiced or all racist and I'm fearful and I got to do this to protect my whatever. If that's the fruit that we see, we're seeing that fruit because that's at the root. The roots reflect the fruit, right? So what's contributing to the roots? More than what I have here, like history. Historically, many of these things have been in place for decades, and no one has had the power to overturn it, right? So some of this is historical. Some of this is in our own family history. We grew up in a family who was biased and prejudiced and hateful, right? Some of it is how we've been socialized. A little bit we've been socialized, which is, I get it on one hand, but we've been socialized to care for our group, right? And especially if you haven't grown up in a diverse area, you kind of only know your group and how your group does things. So how we're socialized contributes to these things and other things being at the root. Media plays a role. What images is the media projecting? How we're educated or not educated. We're in a fight right now over what should the real history be in textbooks, or are we going to lighten things up so it doesn't look as bad as it really was, right? And then also our exposure and familiarity with those that are different than ourselves, meaning did we grow up being exposed and familiar with people that are different? If we didn't, all of these kinds of things and more are going to contribute to these characteristics being at the root level. So I suggest, is roots work the antidote? Meaning, do we need a root canal? Do we need to dig down in those roots and see where we can create some change? So here's the challenge. And this is speaking to what both of our speakers have spoken about on some level. How do you go from being ignorant and unfamiliar to being familiar and knowledgeable? First of all, you have to want to as an individual. As an individual, each person that's listening, you have to say, I want to move along the continuum, right? I want to go where I'm ignorant and unfamiliar. I want to get knowledgeable and familiar. This is what you can do yourself. If I have racist tendencies, what do I do to become anti-racist? If I have apathy, what has to happen for me to be empathetic? If I'm indifferent, I don't care. I don't care about them over there. Then what's going to make me compassionate? What's going to make me recognize somebody is suffering and feel some desire to mitigate their suffering? If I'm judging, what's going to get me to be understanding and accepting? If my heart is shut down, what's going to open my heart? If I have hate for people that are different than myself, what's this line represent, this arrow? What does that represent that's going to get me to love? If it's all about me, what's going to make me think, just like me, they're having that challenge, so I'm going to care about them? If there's misunderstanding or confusion or I'm missing the point, what's going to get me to understand or seek to understand? If I'm aggravated and intensifying the fear, what's going to get me to the point of mitigating the fears? If I'm oblivious and inattentive and thoughtless, what's going to make me be more mindful? And if I'm holding all the power, what's going to make me want to share and care? One thing I found in corporate America and now in academia where I am, what I've noticed, to get somebody to change, they have to believe in a mutual benefit and be motivated to change. I have to be able to point out some type of benefit. And you all are just on fire in the chat. And I'm going to borrow all those things that you have in there, and I'm going to add them to my slide set. So let's keep going. So look, if we had roots like this ongoing classes that you're doing here, you know, you're meeting weekly. That's part of helping the roots, right? Because these meditations, these notions, these concepts, this mindfulness, compassion, and all the things you're doing and learning with Rick and the people that are coming in, those are working on the root core level of our being. So that when you meditate and you tap in to that space that's within you, eventually that state, that meditative state, that loving, calm space comes with you out into the world. So I'm kind of, when I'm meditating, I'm really working on my root level. And then when I go out in the world, I'm kind of on my fruit level, right? But I want to be able to take the essence of what I'm accessing in the meditation with me out into the world. And maybe the more I do that, the less I will be fake and phony. Maybe I'll really be motivated to do more than just put a flag out on my desk. So if we can get our roots and the soil to have love and compassion and empathy and knowledge and sensitivity and open-heartedness, seeking to understand where I'm embodying the truth of who I want to be, then I'm going to start to see that in the fruit. Now, this is challenging because I only really have control over me, right? And maybe my kids. Yeah, right? My little circle. So where do I start? Well, I start with me. I build this capacity in me on my root level and my soil level. And then the fruit that I project out into the world can then be useful toward planetary change. Or that's my dream, right? That's my dream. So how do we treat racism or the isms of the day individually? We become knowledgeable. We understand our relationship to privilege and biases. We study, maybe learn some historical facts. We're open. We try to bridge differences. We get real, right? We cultivate this notion of compassion and caring for others for the rest of our lives. We never stop, right? We keep working toward that goal. We use compassionate language. We try to be authentic and honest and real. We recognize this notion of common humanity and that on some level, people, that person is just like me. Underneath all the politics, you know, all the bull, all the crap, all the hate, what if I can go deep enough, I can probably find the human being. But I might have to go back to when they were a baby, because maybe they got socialized to be who they're evidencing themselves to be today. It's you know, it's some work that's got to be done. I could not find the source of this, but I've been using it for some years now. All of these things I'll include in the slide set, but it's a little guide for us becoming anti-racist. And it kind of acknowledges the different zones we have to go through. There's a fear zone where I'm not so sure, I'm not comfortable, I don't know. Then there's the learning. That more speaks to the zone of the person that I was speaking to first when she was saying, I'm not so sure and, you know, I'm kind of scared. And when I do, I don't know how I'll be received. That's kind of in that learning zone where you have to be a little vulnerable. And then the growth zone where you kind of do realize, yeah, I'm uncomfortable, but I want to kind of get out there and make this a better world. And now what? Now we've got time for just some open conversation, because a lot of you have been putting just some great things in the chat. You know, I went through this lickety split, as we used to say. I went through this fast so we could get to the part where we kind of talk it out a bit. I don't want to negate the weight of this. This is not a snap your fingers and it's a done kind of thing. I think when I was going to college, which was many moons ago, I just knew that by the time I entered the workplace that, you know, things would be better for people like me, for people of color, for women of color, for people of color. And to a certain degree, things changed. But then I had my child and I thought, well, at least by the time my child grows up, things will be so much better, right? I had this vision of the embodied tree. And it got a little better, but now I have grandkids and I'm saying the same thing. So I guess I'm saying once again that these changes are deeply rooted, and it's tough changing things, but it doesn't mean don't try to change things. It means keep at it, keep going in your own realm that you're in, whoever you're touching and influencing with your own families and kids and grandkids, you've got some influence there, because that's the socialization part. We can impact somebody, right? We can impact ourselves and we can impact somebody. And I think one more thing I want to drop in and just open it up is I use the metaphor of the tree, but there's another metaphor that I use that I didn't have time to get nice pictures of. So I'll just tell you what that is. And that's the fish and the lake metaphor. So this metaphor I learned in the Racial Equity Commission of California or something. I went through this series of lessons and courses. And one of the things that they introduced was this metaphor of the lake and the fish. And it just made so much sense. So I want to share that one. So this one says that all of the things that we're trying to do to change things, that's on the level of the fish, right? That's the fish. And the challenge is that the lake itself is like the roots, right? The lake itself is contaminated. So yes, you can have a program, like I did a workshop last week for a program called Life Moves that helps, that has homeless shelters and helps unhoused people. And so they are doing great work and they are pedal to the metal. And sometimes they're getting burned out, but they are right there. But in this metaphor, they're the fish. They're on the fish level. They haven't really changed the lake, meaning they're helping the fish, the individual people that are suffering right now and unhoused. But the homeless construct that is national, if not global, is the lake, right? And so not to make anyone get discouraged, because in a way, I'm working on the fish level. Every time I do a workshop, that's kind of on the fish level. It's what I can do. It's who I can get close to. And if you're willing to listen to me, and can I make sense, and can I make it compelling, and can I, it's a form of change management or reminding you of your humanity, right? But I'm doing that on the fish level. And I'm trying to identify ways that I can do more on the lake level. And the lake level is where is the systemic level. How do we change these systems that are in place that are keeping the conditions like they are? Make sense? Who wants to share? Who has a question or who has a comment? I'm on everything. I'm on LinkedIn. I don't have a website yet. Anyway, I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm a light within is my Instagram, a light within. But you can also look me up on just my name on Instagram. I have a 8-week compassion cultivation training course coming up. Who am I doing that through? Through the Compassion Institute. And I have a couple of shorter classes that I'm doing with Stanford. So they're all on Zoom. So if you, just connect with me anywhere, and then I'll let you know where I'll be and what I'm doing. There you go. Yes. I know your name isn't Wednesday Meditation Co-host.
Yeah, I had a couple of questions.
Love them.
Seems to me when we do help people on a fish level, we bring them hope. We are being the change we want to see.
Yeah.
And like you, it's the place where I know I can practice compassion and, mm-hmm. you know, create change. And then kind of related to that, I don't know a way to change the lake. It's,
I know.
It kind of seems like it needs to be done at the fish level with love, compassion, and setting examples and conversations and all the other things.
Yes. So this is what I want to say. The thing is that the lake has been lake-like for a long time. And so it's difficult to change the nature of the lake. But that doesn't mean don't try. I mean, do we have any lake experts, biologists or ecology people? I mean, somehow we have to recognize whether we're thinking of the lake or we're thinking of the roots, we have to recognize that many of these things have been baked in. They've become a part of the ecosystem, right? And so that's why it hasn't been so easy for things to change.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Well, I would say it kind of inspired me there to think outside the box to mitigate the chemicals and toxicity coming into the lake. So that would be the taking the stand, the filtering, the mitigation.
Yes.
Keeping that dirt and toxicity from coming in. So kind of it helps filter the lake and cleans it up over time.
I like where you're headed, right? And it's going to take all of us kind of, first you have to realize what is the problem. And I'm kind of naming the problem. Once you kind of, that's why I can't make this change. Then we're at the beginning, we're not at the end. But all together, maybe we can figure it out. Yeah. Let's see. Now, I don't know who was first. Diana? And then Marilyn and Barbara.
Thank you very much. Your presentation is so heartwarming and so hopeful, Lakeva. I have not had much hope for a long time. And I'm thinking of an analogy from salmon mitigation, where we add logs to the river to slow the sediment, to slow it down and plant brush, native brush along the sides of the stream to cool the river so that the salmon can survive, because we've gotten the water so hot that they cannot survive. Mm-hmm. And so, but all of these techniques that we have learned, we have to partner the fish, mm-hmm. and the two-leggeds and the Standing Nations, we have to partner together to do that.
Yes.
And that requires all of the things that you were talking about before, the connection, the seeking to connect, the open-heartedness so that we see that, you know, the birds and the trees and the humans and the fish are all one life, one being. And so it has to be, from my perspective, simultaneous, where we help as many fish as we can.
Right.
And on the weekends, we do stream mitigation, or we pick up trash, or, you know, whatever we can do to decontaminate the lake. And there's no end of work in that, you know, decommissioning all of the nuclear power plants and all of the heat and toxicity that they put into the water, using water as that metaphor for life. So I'm so grateful for your template that we can use to move forward. Mm-hmm. Yes, watercress. Yes. You know, all of these things we can do. And it just takes that willingness to focus and commit and to reach out and connect with each other. Thank you.
Well said. And thank you for that knowledge. That's what I need. So what would you really do in an ecological sense? So that was helpful. Very much so. Okay, Marilyn.
A lot of information on Soil and Water Conservation District websites.
Can you put it in the chat for us?
I would be happy to. I would be happy to. Thank you.
Okay, Marilyn. Are you there? Oh, here we go. There you go.
Oh, okay. I'm on now.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Many people have already pointed out what I wanted to point out in the chat, and also the previous speaker. I'm into both and, you know, rather than the either or.
Yeah.
So I wanted to say, you know, you work on both. You clean up the water.
Yes.
When you clean up the water, that's definitely going to help some of the fish in the water, right?
That's right. That's right.
So you can help the fish that are ready to die because they're so contaminated by the water.
Exactly.
But you can also work on cleaning up the lake. And the other thing, I wanted to just say, I appreciate the your fish and lake metaphor. I wasn't getting the roots, because when the roots are damaged, when the roots of a tree are sick, are toxic, I just don't know how to fix it other than pull up the tree. I mean, just get rid of it. Mm-hmm. Pull up those roots and start over again. But the fish in the lake makes you think. Yeah, fish in the lake makes you think you could at least work on cleaning up things based on the way they are now, rather than tearing something out of the ground and starting over. I don't know.
Well, thank you for naming that. Because I share both, and whatever works, right? Whichever one you can latch onto that kind of helps us figure this doggone thing out. So thank you for that, Marilyn. And Barbara? There you go. Ooh. Barbara, I'm asking you to unmute. There you go.
I like very much what I've heard and what you've said. And I like the fish and lake analogy.
Okay.
But now all the knowledge that we have and it is applied, it doesn't seem like more like an individual basis. And my understanding is that the government ought to play a role. Don't we have a Department of Ecology for Nature? Do we not have something that is more overriding from a higher level to get the fish to live in a healthy environment?
That is my question. I think it's a good question. Is that supposed to be the United Nations? I don't know what that, it seems like there should be that. I know in the US, someone was trying to start a Department of Peace. You know, I don't know. I think you're asking a great question, like who's looking at it from the vantage point that we are now talking about it?
And right, and who would add knowledge and programs to this very deep-rooted, of course, problem? And it seems to me that it hasn't been done for a long time. Because the people that need it the most, that they have the least power. It has to come from a power base.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we are like the fish in the lake. And we cannot help ourselves. And individuals are very helpful, but I think it's more power coming from a powerful base.
I actually agree. And we can do things, but that's why I was saying it's got to be on a systemic level. It's got to be on a bigger level for it to really change the lake. But in the meantime, we need to be helping the fish, just like somebody said, and I can't remember who it was. Diana. Did you go, Diana? There you go. I'm asking you.
I just didn't bring my hand down. My apologies.
Oh, you didn't put your hand down. Carol.
There are indeed a number of federal and state organizations supposedly dealing with these things in the area of conservation, water resources. There are numerous, many. The problem is they're not doing their job.
Oh, geez.
And I certainly am not the one who knows how to get them to do that job.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been around for a long time. And what has happened for the most part is that nonprofit organizations like the Nature Conservancy, the Audubon Society, Wildlife Fund, many different organizations are trying to fill a gap that they cannot do without you know, underlying government support. And they are basically not getting it.
So,
I'm sorry. I have a tendency to be the one that ends on a downer note, and I apologize profusely.
Tell it like it is. Tell it like it is, Carol.
There are so many government agencies that are supposedly working on these things that are not doing the job.
Well, to some extent, that's obvious, right? Because it hasn't solved the issue. So Thanks, Carol. No, it's okay. Okay, Tony, you're going to be potentially our last speaker because I think you go do something else at 7:30. You go to small groups. Okay, Tony.
To finish on a more optimistic note, I think that we have to look at it from both approaches, from a bottom up and a top down.
Right.
And so from a bottom up, we meeting tonight and having this Sangha and discussing it and learning and being able to take that out in our communities and in our families and friends and having it spread and ripple is the bottom up. Mm-hmm. And also bottom up just putting pressure on governments and institutions as well. Mm-hmm. That's where we can play a role. And then top down, I was a federal employee and, you know, back in the day, there were courses, mandatory courses on diversity and harassment and other things. So within companies and within governments and institutions, there is a responsibility to offer the training, having the hiring policies to ensure that we do have diverse workplace and respectful workplaces. So to clean the lake, I think we really have to work bottom up and top down.
Yes, that's true.
You know, and the greatest challenge goes back to what you spoke to earlier is how do we have a positive impact on the children and the youth?
Yes.
And that are in, you know, you can choose your media these days. Obama mentioned that as being a problem. We no longer have three networks with factual news. So I think really that is a huge piece in the puzzle of how do we work with the younger people for our future.
Mm-hmm. I agree with everything you said, Tony, and really each of you who spoke and wrote in the chat, I think, you know, we can all take this in, you know, and take it into our minds, but take it into our hearts, take it into our spirits, our soul, and figure out what we're going to do first off and what we're going to support, you know, and figure out a way that we can play a real role in it, you know. And I'm not here to judge anybody, meaning it, the role you have with your own family could be where you're, you know, planting the seeds. If you have a profession where you can say more than do that, if you're motivated to do something on the government level, then do that.
I think it comes back to your introduction of being authentic and living our lives, living our values. Mm-hmm. And we are able to evolve as people and modify our values and the way we are in the world. And by doing that, other people see it, and hopefully it'll influence them to make changes too, aside from advocacy work. So I close on that.
Okay. Thank you so much, Tony. I love that department of love. Everything is a metaphor for everything else. That's so true. I think we have a way, do we? Yeah, I think we can save the chat. Gee, I hope you invite me back again and we'll see where we go. I don't know if I've got any more metaphors, but we'll see what you might want to address if I come back, and we'll kind of keep working it. We'll keep working it. At least on a personal level, you can take care of yourself and, you know, do some of the self-care things. When you're kind of stabilized, you're able to do more for other people. So I will share with you from my slides and my notes and my gifts and my heart. And I just have so much, I feel love for you. I don't even know you, but the fact that you're coming to this space in this place is personally very moving. I got goosebumps. Very moving and encouraging. Kind of makes me emotional. Just the fact that you're, you know, coming back each time to see how you can grow in your own personal walk and maybe what you can do for others.